Members of the American Postal Workers Union handle more than 165 billion letters and packages a year. That's about 34 million pounds of mail every day. Ever wonder what this costs you as a taxpayer? Millions, tens of millions, hundreds of millions? Not a single cent. The United States Postal Service doesn't run on your tax dollars. It's funded solely by stamps and postage. Brought to you by the men and women of the American Postal Workers Union.
Welcome back to the Union Edge, Labor's Talk Radio. I'm Angela Bachman, and I'm here with Brittany Sheets.
Hey, everyone. It's Buck O'Clock, as I like to call it. Right now, we have Buck Gino of Work in Progress Radio joining us. Buck, welcome back.
It's always great to be with you, ladies. It's kind of one of the high points of my day.
Aw, thank you, Buck.
Glad to hear it.
Enjoy it.
So we were kind of talking a little bit offside, aside from the fact that our weather's kind of crappy here in Pittsburgh today, but you know what? It still can't stop us. It's Friday, and we're supposed to have possibly almost 80 degrees tomorrow, so needless to say, I'm pretty psyched. But something that's a little bit more interesting than the weather is Chris Christie. Now, he wants to throw his hat in the ring. He's kind of hinted back and forth. He had a little interview the other day basically saying he still doesn't know. I think that's very interesting, and I think that... if I had to peg anybody, I think he's going to pull out of his hints of throwing his hat in because there's too many monkeys in the ring. But he had a little interesting, you were reading something on Think Progress, actually. It was kind of interesting about he's been kind of quiet for a while, and I think he's going to start popping up in the news a little bit more lately.
Yeah, you know, I was listening to your awards for the tinfoil hat, and I was thinking, we would show him in there. You know, he's been known to say things, kind of off the cuff and be offensive to some people, and not apologizing for it. But one of the latest things is that he's been basically he made some big time promises to the public workers out in New Jersey about their pension and how they were going to. Straighten it out funded-wise and how they were going to not cut benefits, I believe. And he kind of went back on his word. There's a surprise. And now yesterday he came, or I think it was not yesterday, but in his last speech to the public, basically, he was talking about Social Security and Medicare. And he has a plan. And in his plan, basically, is, I think all the cheap labor conservatives feel this way. They're just more of them willing to talk about it at this point. But one of the things he wants to do is he wants to raise the retirement age to 69, which is now early retirement, I believe, is 62, and I believe then it's 66. So he wants to raise that. And now people can get Medicare at 65, and now he wants to raise that to 67.
Hmm. Why?
There are some other things. Well, It's pretty simple why, because, you look at the longevity of, and they look at things like, rates of how long people live. And so that's their plan to save some money. Basically, the plan makes it so that you and or people your age will never be able to retire. You know, sometimes we look at Social Security and Medicare as an issue that's really important to, people of my generation, the ones that are newly retired or getting ready to retire. But it's really, really, really important for your listeners and yourselves around that age group, because if they get their way, if they get to raise the retirement age, and if they get to raise the year that you can collect Medicare, and also the deep in their plan, they've always wanted to take the Social Security dollars and allow people to put it in the stock market. Mm-hmm. Then, the odds of you guys ever collecting anything are getting slimmer. So, to be fair, he's mentioned something, and this will be a selling point. He's mentioned something that says if people who make over $80,000 a year, they would not be allowed to collect benefits, even if they have paid into them their whole life. And then he puts a window of, I think, $200,000 for a couple. Hmm. So,
wait, why would you not be able to collect even if you've paid into it?
Because you're over, and what they're trying to do is put an income limit on it. What that means is if you make over a certain amount of money, you will not be able to collect Social Security.
Oh. That sounds suspiciously like the pension issue that we've been talking about people that have given up parts of their paycheck to have it later, and then it suddenly goes poof because someone decided that was okay.
Literally, it's kind of funny we're having this conversation just because of my family's been kind of having these kind of conversations lately because of my dad's older. He's going to be 61 at the end of the month. Sorry, Dad.
Mm-hmm.
called out.
And nothing wrong with that.
But we've been having a frank conversation about it because we're looking to get he's looking at it as he needs a new car. His car's kind of it's on the rocks. And he's looking do I really want to pick up a payment? Because he's weighing out the fact that he's co-signing my student loans. My sister still needs another year of school for co-signing for her student loans. He's co-signed on some of my mom's student loans from whenever she went to school, back in 2010, she graduated with an associate's degree. And it's just the fact that when you look at it, it looks like he's got all this loan debt because he's co-signed on to all of it. And now he's I really need a vehicle. I'm getting older. He's a mechanic, but he doesn't necessarily want something he's got to work on and dump money into for the rest of his life. He kind of wants to take a step back and he's contemplating retirement. And he's can I swing this because I have all this attached to me and I want to pick up a car payment because I can't afford to get one, outright. And I want something that's going to last me for hypothetically, to my later years here, which is, you would expect. And he's not sure that he can make that investment because he's not sure what he wants to do, which direction he wants to go. And he's looking at his retirement, and it's not reliable here in the future. It's questioning for many Americans, do we need to work longer? Because is this stuff going to be able to honestly support us with all these cuts they've been making? And I see it, because I see it from him having this conversation and how it could impact, my family. And then I think about it for how many years down the road for myself. I see my grandmother on Social Security and how it's, month to month for her. I see what we would have to scale back on, how we'd have to handle the situation for us. And I also see how I would have to look at it in the future for myself. And it really makes me think, at this age now of 23, I really need to think about a retirement, my own independent retirement for myself, to have something that I myself can rely on, that my parents are literally right now guiding me through, how to set something up, what I should do, how I should handle it, just that I have that in my back pocket. And don't necessarily have to rely on, Social Security because of I'm not sure that it's really going to be readily available for me. And I don't know what age they're going to let me access it if there's any left.
Right. Well, the other thing, too, is that, we have all these discussions about Social Security and the funding level and if there's enough money. And, really, if the cheap labor conservatives would just look at really what the fix would be. Right now, I believe there's a cutoff. I think it's somewhere a little bit north of $100,000. If you make a little bit over $100,000, you cut off. When you make that, you're done paying Social Security. What that means is all these people that are making, $500,000 or $250,000 or anything more than a little over $100,000, they're not making a contribution. If they would just take off that limit.
Yeah, really.
And allow people to have to pay Social Security on every dime that they make. They'd have more than enough money to make Social Security run forever.
Yeah, yeah. I just feel there's so many simple fixes to so many things like this in life that I just kind of want to just facepalm and just be come on, guys. This is such a simple answer. But for me, being a millennial, I just kind of feel like it's almost like they have it. And they're okay with how it is, and they don't care what happens to those below them. That's how they make me feel personally. That's my personal opinion. As a millennial,
I would go
sometimes
further than that. Actually, I would go so far as to say they are sabotaging it for us because they not only do they not care about us, but they are so interested in their own issues and their own profits that they're willing to sabotage it to make money. And so
we
are even further screwed.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe that's also cynical, or maybe more cynical. I don't know. But
we're
going to
talk about that when we come back here, because we've got to take a quick break. But I'm Brittany Sheets with Angela Bachman and Buck Gino, and you're listening to the Union Edge, Labor's Talk Radio.
My dictionary defines a staff as a walking stick used either for balance or as a weapon. So how are today's congressional staffs used? At one time, they were behind-the-scenes people hired to walk lawmakers through the complexities of legislation or to help them find balance between competing viewpoints. These days, though, top staffers tend to be a specific type of high-profile operative, corporate lobbyists. At the urging of House Speaker John Boehner, members are bringing the K Street lobbying crowd directly inside their offices and committees to run America's lawmaking process. There's nothing subtle about the intent, These staffs are weapons for knocking aside the public interest and advancing the narrow legislative interests of their former corporate clients. Yes, the same corporations that generously fund the campaigns of Boehner's Republican majority. Neat, huh? As the excellent investigative digger Lee Fong recently detailed in The Nation, the conflict of interest in this hat-switching scheme is a brazen, insolent affront to our democratic ideals and to any sense of ethics. Examples range from the new staff director of the Intelligence Committee, who comes straight from lobbying for such intelligence contractors and profiteers as General Dynamics, Boeing, and the infamous Blackwater outfit, to a leading anti-minimum wage lobbyist for retail giants like Walmart, who has now been embedded as a top staffer inside the troika of House leaders. This is Jim Hightower saying, it's bad enough that our laws have been corrupted by unlimited corporate spending on their army of influence peddlers, but now we taxpayers have the added insult of having to foot the bill for the horde of lobbyists who've quietly been slipped inside to serve as staffers. They're not there merely to influence lawmakers, but to become the de facto unelected corporate Congress.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's populist take on what the powers that be are up to. Find out more at hightowerlowdown.org.
The International Union of Operating Engineers, Local 66, works with builders and contractors to build a better community. Local 66's tradesmen and women have received the specialty training needed to meet the complex challenges of any project, making them the most capable workforce in the region. From schools, highways, and pipeline projects to casinos and arenas, the operating engineers build any job, large or small. For over 100 years, Local 66 has provided superior service that our community can count on. They are your one-stop resource for qualified and productive operating engineers and heavy equipment mechanics. To learn more about the benefits of organized labor and more information about the International Union of Operating Engineers Local 66, go to www.iuoe66.org. That's www.iuoe66.org.
Hi, I'm LeVar Burton, and I'm proud to be a book person. How do I choose a book? Sometimes it's the cover, sometimes it's the title. I guess I'm pretty visual. If a book's really impressing me and the writing is really good, I will peek and see what the last paragraph is, because the endings of books should rock you. I am a book person, and if you're a book person too, read to a child and spark a lifetime of ambition. Join me at bookpeopleunite.org, because reading is fundamental. A public service announcement brought to you by Reading is Fundamental, Library of Congress, and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the Union Edge, Labor's Talk Radio. My name is Angela Bachman. I'm here with Brittany Sheets.
Hey, everyone.
We were just talking about how we are ready to kick the old people out and take over the ruling of this country. Buck Gino is joining us. Buck, welcome back.
It's always a pleasure to be with you, ladies. I want to be part of the generation that stays, though.
So, you definitely are. This is my master plan here, okay? So we're talking.
Taking over Congress.
And I'm just like, you know what?
I just kind
of feel like they're really, I mean, I've been saying this for a while. Like, they're really kicking at us. And there's some people who get it, like Elizabeth Warren or someone like Erin McClellan, who comes in here and she gets it. And she's fighting for us and she's trying to stand for us and she understands the issues and she sees firsthand how it impacts us.
She'll be here later this afternoon, by the way.
Yeah. And it's just like, it's so great and refreshing talking to someone like that, like one-on-one, and they get it. And like other people, like my parents, they get it. And it just, I feel like sometimes I'm just hitting my head against a wall. And it was funny. I had a conversation yesterday. One got my hair done. I was talking to my hairdresser. I've known her for years. I know her family, know her kids. Families go way back, that kind of thing. So she was like, I know that you're on this show. And I know you do some radio stuff. But like, what do you guys really talk about? And honestly, like, what do you really do? I'm curious. I said, okay. Laid it out for her, told her about our experience in going to Next Up last month, and told her about how we got kind of like how I got started in it back when I was in high school with Charles, and how me and Angela have kind of like we started hosting on like during the summer on like Fridays here, and we really got started, really got jazzed, and now we're really like, you know what, like we want to go out and just like kick butt. Like I've like sometimes I
have tired of this crap.
We're tired of this crap. I'm tired of this crap, especially considering like I just get so flustered and so frustrated when I look at like what's happening and read it in the news. But then I go out to something like I did on Wednesday. I went to the Fight for 15 rally here in Pittsburgh. There were like 500 to 700 people there. There were people already in unions, people from like every walk of earth were there. Pitt students were there. And it was just a mass group of people who got it. They got it and they're tired of it. And that's what I was explaining to her yesterday when I was telling her about everything I've been doing and the reporting I've been doing. And she said, this to me sounds like another uprising of a grassroots movement. And I said, that's exactly what it is. It is another uprising of a bunch of people who are frustrated, they're beat up, and they're tired of being stepped on. And you know what? We're starting to make some noise. They might not think that we're going to do it. And they might still look at us and go, oh, all these fast food workers who want $15 an hour from McDonald's. No, it's not so much that like you don't think they deserve that $15 an hour because they flip a burger. It's the fact that they're trying to raise and support a family. And you know what? They can't necessarily go out and get a better job. That's as good as they can get right now. Ask a college student who's trying to graduate right now. They can't find a job. Unless you're in business or you're in engineering, congratulations. You've kind of got something. But
maybe not.
If you're graduating, I know I can still list several of my friends that I graduated with almost a year ago, less than a month a year ago, and they still do not have jobs in their field, let alone a job period that is not a retail job. I'm very fortunate and very lucky that I'm in the position I'm in, and I have a job and it's something I love in my field. But that's exhibit A of millennials not developing here. And when it comes our turn to, you know, run this country in a couple years, we are just going to take these people down. Or at least I'm currently hoping we're going to take these people down because I want to be one of the people that does it. And here's our little grandmaster plan. Angela and I were kind of joking. Now I've kind of given this whole preface rant here. I'm standing on my soapbox like Charles. I think that we should just, you know, take over here. We'll just take this group of very energized millennials who just wants to go out there and just make some changes. And just as energized as they are right now, just keep the momentum going. And we're going to use people like you, Buck, you and Deb and Charles, and you're going to be our counsel. So you're going to counsel us because that's what you already do and give us the hints of like, you know, this is what we did in the past. This is how it worked. This is our labor history. Charlie and Rosemary, you know, shout out to you guys for that also. Yeah. And we're just going to get all of you awesome people together and just make you our personal little counsel and just help direct us in the right direction and make sure we stay on track to, you know, like move and shake this world.
I think Rosemary will teach us how to elbow some people out. I think she's got that experience.
For real.
Well, you know, I think myself, and you mentioned a bunch of people, Charles, Rosemary, and some of the people that are regulars on the show, Deb Klein, we really do, that is our job, is to inspire you.
And you do.
Go out and make those changes. So to hear you speak like that is very pleasing. And so, like I said, it's just glad to be some sort of inspiration. And on a serious note, because it's pretty simple for me when you talk about whether these people should be allowed to make $15 an hour. And this is really the telling point for me, is that right now in our society we have, say you take example McDonald's, say you had a young lady or a young man, doesn't matter, they were working, maybe they're a single parent. They're working at McDonald's for 40 hours a week or whatever they work, and they collect their minimum wage. What happens is they can't afford to go back home, pick up their child, and go back to McDonald's and eat. They can't even afford to patronize the place where they work. It's the same with any, you know, not only McDonald's, it's the department stores or whatever. And that's what is scary, and that's why it's so pleasing to see these young people and all people out there fighting for, you know, the Fight for 15, because that's what it's going to take. Because, you know, that's what businesses are looking at themselves, all those 80 people that own the half of the wealth in the world, that, you know, they are saying to themselves, where are these demonstrations? Where are these sit-downs? Where are these strikes? Where are these people that, you know, say they want something? Because they're all looking at history, and everybody's really aware of how the labor movement got started. It got pretty ugly at times. And that's what they're sitting back wondering, is when is that going to come, you know? And they've done some things where they've armed the police forces and things like that to help where those type of things, can get squashed. But they look at themselves and say that. You know, one of the favorite stories that everybody can say is that the I'll have to give this guy's name. I will maybe at 2:30. But there's a story in the paper that talked about it, and a guy says, pats a guy on the shoulder and says, you know what, do you think that the labor movement will ever come back? And what we got to start doing is look at him and say, you know, you better hope so.
Yeah.
Because in the way history is going, is the way people are going, what you're going to do is you're going to run people completely out of money, and they're never going to be able to buy your product.
Oh, completely. And something that, to kind of go with that, is this whole Fight for 15 movement. I've run into so many people who have gone, they don't deserve $15 an hour to flip a burger, they screwed up my order. I mean, I'm not alone that I get peeved when, like, my orders get screwed up. That's anybody in the world. I screw things up on a daily basis down here. Doesn't mean that I don't deserve to make a good wage for myself either to be able to pay my bills. There's an ethical element to this, and that's what people don't get. It's not happening directly to them specifically or their family, and they don't get it. They don't get that this isn't just about making $15 an hour. It's about the fact that, you know, these people are in an economic situation where they don't have that mom and dad to bail them out or help them. They don't have that relative to take them in or to, you know, give them that extra couple bucks for gas. These people don't have cars. They are stuck in just terrible economic situations, and they rely on the system that is not always there to help them. And they struggle, and they're the underlying base of our economy that, you know, like, they need help, and we're supposed to help them and take care of them. Well, I'm not saying, like, lift them up above yourself, but I am saying, you know, like, make them, help them. Don't be greedy. And that's what I feel like is really happening. There's a lot of greed, and it's more than just the whole pay an hour. It's also work rights, because of the fact that these people are just being mistreated unbelievably at their job. And it's not even so much just the fact the Fight for 15 is a catchy name. That's a big part of it. It's a catchy name.
Yeah.
It's not saying that, like, we're demanding this. Yes, okay, they would like a better pay. But it's about more than that. And that's what people don't get, is they work in, they usually are the people who have a nice job, have good benefits, or, you know, have all right benefits. They aren't making, like, thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars a year. They're middle class going, hey, I'm struggling too. Why aren't I getting this? I'm like, you know what? Why don't you go join the movement? Because this isn't just for them. It's for everybody. So if you're not happy with your job and how much money you make or your benefits, then you know what? Join the movement. And that's what forces the hand of the people at the top.
Exactly.
Amen.
No, there's an old saying. You talked about the person that talked about someone who didn't want to give them $15 an hour because they screwed up their order. There's an old saying that we use that sometimes in the construction field is that, you know what, if you're working and you work your whole life and you don't make any mistakes, or that tells me you're not doing much.
Yeah. So, yeah. I agree. Nobody's perfect, guys. Nobody's perfect. Nobody's not going to screw up on a daily basis.
Exactly.
So, yeah, how many times have you screwed up at your job, buddy? For real.
Seriously. All right, Buck, well, we have about a minute left. Give us a little preview of what you're going to be talking about at 2:30.
Well, we're gonna talk to Tom Good from the National Labor Relations Board. And last week we talked to Elizabeth Kerwin, who talked about some of the new rules that were coming in effect for the National Labor Relations Board. And we're going to touch on some of those again as it relates to emails and the social media about organizing and some of the rules about filing for elections. And join us. It'll be a good discussion in our efforts to, you know, we often talk sometimes about how government, we want to get rid of big government and we want to change things. But, you know, the National Labor Relations Board and the things that they do to protect workers is one of the ways our government works. And so join us and we'll have a lot of fun.
That sounds great. Looking forward to it. And thank you for joining us, Buck. That's Buck Gino with Work in Progress Radio. I'm Angela Bachman here with Brittany Sheets, and we'll be right back with congressional candidate Aaron McClellan.